Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Speaks to a truth of our time in North America and the world. In the 21st century, we are defined not by our borders, but by our bonds.
In the past, Mexican authorities were an unfortunate way in the treatment for immigrants. But now we are changing the policy. We changed already the law, and that is different today. We are trying to write a new story talking about immigrants, especially coming from Central American countries.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could.
So the backstabber in chief this week, the committed lifelong Marxist in chief, Barack Hussein Obama, has said that we no longer have borders with Mexico. And so, therefore, we are now at a new stage of lowness. Joining us in Obama's weakness on the world stage are the American people, because you are an American and this man is your president. The question I'm going to ask you today is this. Are you frightened with the direction Obama's taking America and why? Be specific if you are frightened. I'm going to eliminate any doubt, actually, when you think about it. I want to read for you what I've written out, Obama's weakness on the world stage. Here is the list in the Savage Nation. In case many of you are deceived by the propaganda, I'm going to read 7 points and tell me if you can refute any of them. Tell me if you diehard leftists can refute any of these points. Over and over again, Obama has attempted to appease the Hitler of Iran and has been humiliated over and over and over again. And each time he has been humiliated, each rejected offer is met with renewed U.S. negotiating overtures. So it's like you going to a bully and saying to the bully, don't hit me, and the bully slaps you, and you beg him not to hit you again. Number two, Obama's given into Russia's sphere of influence in Eastern Europe over the Ukraine, right? You don't know anything about that. Over Georgia, Russia has annexed Abkhazia and South Ossetia. That's according to Obama and Hillary's reset policy with Russia. Three, Obama has appeased Syria, Iran's puppet. Four, Obama has gratuitously slapped at Britain over the Falkland Islands. You didn't know that? Didn't make it to your local paper? Five, Obama has stabbed Israel in the back. He has undercut the Czech Republic and Poland, and he has treated Lebanon and Georgia with indifference. Six, Obama has been passive as Venezuela's dictator Hugo Chavez has been organizing his anti-American revolution while deepening his country's military and commercial ties both with Iran and Russia. That's right, in our own sphere of influence. Seven, if you forgot this one, which side were you on? Obama supported a pro-Chavez, pro-Castro would-be dictator in Honduras seeking unconstitutional powers in defiance of the democratic institutions of that nation. But if you think this is by accident, you're crazy. Remember his speech before the UN. At the UN last year, Obama said no one nation can or should try to dominate another nation. He was talking about the nation called the United States of America, which he has boll-weaveled himself into the leadership of. Obama's weakness on the world stage, it's not weakness. It's not passivity. It is the ascent of a Marxist to the highest position in the land. Speaking about Marxism, we have another shock for all of you Upper East Side New Yorkers who are actually delusional. Most American liberals think that because they have a certain degree of education and a certain degree of affluence, that they are sane. Of course, their doctors know differently. Their daughters know differently. Their wives know differently. Their husbands know differently. Most American liberals are delusional, which is why they're more medicated than conservatives. Today, a group of New York liberals are sitting in abject awe in Carnegie Hall as I speak, worshiping one of the world's biggest holy men phonies who I have ridiculed for years, named the Dalai Lama. How many years have I ridiculed the Dalai Lama on this show? And I've said, stop listening to this fraud. Today, the Dalai Lama goes to New York City, and hundreds, if not thousands, of liberals come and put their hands in front of themselves, and they bow as though they're in a Chinese restaurant asking for a glass of water or a napkin. And the Tibetan leader says, I am a Marxist. That's right. The Tibetan leader, Dalai Lama, the con man, says, still I am a Marxist. Marxism has moral ethics, says Dalai Lama, whereas capitalism is only how to make profit, said the old foul-mouthed fool. I have one bit of advice for the old foul-mouthed con man, the Dalai Lama. Take your begging cup to Marxist nations. Someone asked him about the charge for tickets. One of the reporters actually asked the foul-mouthed phony from Tibet why his lectures were so expensive. Why were tickets selling for as much as hundreds of dollars? The foul-mouthed phony Dalai Lama said, none of the money goes to me personally. You should ask the organizer. I have no connection. Really? And then, of course, he broke into his famous little laugh, and all the liberals went along with the laugh. Do you know how that goes? Have you ever been at one of these liberal a-kissing events where if the master laughs, they laugh as though they're in a sort of est session? Whenever the laughter emanates from the stage, they know it's a time to laugh like the little children they are sitting in Huggies. Now, the Dalai Lama is of no concern to us. The Dalai Lama is a, let us say, foul gas on the world stage. Nothing to me. But I'm giving you an example of how astute I am with regard to people and the world's political leaders and the political class. For years, I have ridiculed the Dalai Lama rather mildly because I know something about this type. I've met them. I've met these types with the holy robes, with the orange robes. I've seen them at various events where the little old ladies in tennis sneakers with a Priuses come and sort of worship the man. Anyway, here we are, and here we have another abuse of the Obama administration. The top boss at Department of Homeland Insecurity says that the feds might not process illegal aliens sent to them by officials from Arizona. That means the top cop in Homeland Security is violating the law. That means the top cop in Homeland Security is backing the felons from Mexico and other points south. That means he is committing a crime. That means, like his boss, he is a criminal. Did you know that? Did you know any of this? Top DHS boss says feds might not process illegals referred to them by Arizona officials. You didn't know about that? Well, let me read you a few more stories on michaelsavage.com. Pirates terrorize U.S. boaters on Mexico border lake. It is unsafe in Mexico. Don't go to Mexico. We are being advised. No kidding. Did you see this article? Club Med Greeks break the euro. That's an important story. I'm a Marxist, says the Dalai Lama at Carnegie Hall, because Marxism has moral ethics, whereas capitalism is only how to make profits. But this bum in saffron robes has come to a capitalist nation to make some money on his ticket sales. I don't see him giving a speech in Venezuela or in Cuba, do you? Now, let me ask you something. Tell me about the moral ethics of Marxism. Tell me about the thousands or hundreds of thousands who died in the Soviet Union's Gulag Archipelago. Ask them about the ethics of Marxism. Or go to Cuba and ask the Cubans who have been in jail for up to 30 years under that leader of Cuba, the Marxist miracle, south of the border. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm asking you a simple question. Are you frightened with the direction Obama's taking America? And if so, why? What are you exactly frightened of? What specifically is it that frightens you about his policies? You are frightened. You are taking it out on the incumbents. There is no question that the Republicans are just as vulnerable as the Democrats. And there is no question in my mind that the incumbent talk show hosts, even those who wrap themselves in the flag, are now being associated with the Republican Party, but not me, Michael Savage, because I've never been a water carrier for the Republican Party. I will tell you right now, point blank, that all of those talk show hosts who've been calling for a Republican resurgence, their numbers are in the toilet. Their ratings are in the garbage because they're seen for what they are. That's right. The jig is up, Wallbanger. Whatever Germany does, the euro as we know it is dead, says a journalist in England. Now, does that matter to you? Well, I guess it matters to you. Why should you care about the euro? Well, I'll tell you why, because they're interconnected in some ways. You have to read this article because it's brilliant. I didn't write it. I just linked it. Jeff Randall. He writes about what's going on in Europe and why, and if you want to understand it, I'll give you some of the key points. The euro has many flaws, but its weakest link is Greece, whose fundamental problem is that for years it spent too much, earned too little, and plugged the gap by borrowing in order to enjoy a rich man's lifestyle. Enter Obamanomics. Enter Nancy the crazy Pelosi. Nancy the hammer Pelosi is right now trying to push through yet another $200 billion bill in order to enrich further her friends. Tell me how different Nancy Pelosi is from the idiots who are running ran Greece into the ground. Years spent too much, earned too little, and plugged the gap by borrowing in order to enjoy a rich man's lifestyle. It flouted EU rules on the limits to budget deficits. Its national accounts were a moussaka of minced statistics, topped off with a sauce of, well, I won't even describe it. But what actually happened is even more interesting. How in the hell did Greece get into the European Union? How did it get into Eurozone membership? Because of sleight of hand bookkeeping. It made no sense to join, as you well know. The people knew that. They knew that Greece was the basket case of Europe. They had no place getting into the Eurozone. But right now they say that is why the euro in its current form is finished. It says the game is up for a monetary union that was meant to bolt together work and save citizens in Northern Europe with the party animals of Club Med. Let me repeat that. The game is up for a monetary union that was meant to bolt together work and save citizens in Northern Europe with the party animals of Club Med. What is the comparison to America? Tell us who the workers are in America and who the party animals are in Club Obama. Club Obama. Club Obama. Club Obama. Think about who Club Obama is made up of. Who makes up Club Obama? We have wrecked public finances. We have an out-of-control administration that has no idea what it is doing to us. Or if it does know what it's doing it on purpose. They're trying to break us as sure as I'm sitting here. And we, the hardworking middle class of America, have had enough. That is right. But what will it lead to? How will it end? Well, you hear today that Obama passed a bank reform act. And you say, bravo. Well, on the face of it, I'm in favor of a financial reform act. I have been for a long period of time. But what I called for is not what Obama the deceiver has done. I called for the reinstitution of the Glass-Steagall Act, for example. That's not what Obama did. Obama has passed a window-dressing bank reform law. The very same thieves who created the meltdown which gave us Obama are now still pulling the strings. In other words, the puppeteers are still yanking the strings. None of them have been called on the carpet. So don't tell me about his Bank Reform Act, because if you actually study it, you find out it's nothing but a racket, another racket all over again. And so here we are facing the meltdown of Greece, the meltdown of the euro, and the meltdown of the United States. Are you frightened with the direction Obama's taking America? And if so, why? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. I have enumerated 7 points to show you Obama's weakness on the world stage, and this is only a small portion of what he has done to us. His so-called reset policy is really nothing more than appeasement, and we are in very deep trouble internationally. But more importantly, we are in very deep trouble with our own border with regard to Mexico, as you well know, inviting the head of the superb nation of Mexico to lecture us about human rights here. Having a so-called State Department official during a meeting with China about the human rights abuses in China, where they do harvest the kidneys of political dissidents, having the audacity to say that our law in Arizona is equal to the human rights abuses in China. I mean, it gets worse every day. So I asked you, are you frightened with the direction Obama's taking America, and why? Now, let me pull back for a minute. Last night, I caught the end of a movie called The Misfits with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and Montgomery Clift. I had never actually seen the movie. I was astounded at this scene in this film. And the scene that I saw contained Marilyn Monroe, as I say, Gable and Montgomery Clift. And they were out hunting in an old airplane and an old pickup truck somewhere out west for wild Mustangs. They would chase the horses down in a pickup truck, lasso them from the back of the truck, tie them up, tie their 4 feet together. You see the horse laying there exhausted after it's been caught. And basically its eyes full of fear, as you can imagine, waiting to be picked up the next day by the slaughterhouse. Marilyn Monroe played an amazing role, that of a woman who screams at the men, "You're all murderers. Leave them alone. Let them go. You're all murderers." She put on an amazing scene. She was sort of the heart screaming out at these guys. And it was heart-wrenching to watch them chasing down. First, the mares. It was a stallion with three mares and a baby horse, whatever they call them. And they chased down the mares. They lasso them. And the horses would fight the best they could, trying to save their lives. But then the cowboys would tie up their four legs and tie them to their neck and leave them on the desert floor tied to a tire. Most touching scene was the colt, the little fowl, going up to paw the mother horse as she lay there all tied up, helpless on the ground. It's amazing to watch these horses. But then they go after the stallion, the head of the brood. The stallion puts up the greatest fight, but eventually he too was brought down by those men who wanted to sell him for the money, for 5 cents a pound. The three girl horses, the baby and the stallion. And as I watched the stallion being lassoed and brought down, I couldn't help but thinking what an amazing and apt description it is of the Lilliputians on the left and what they have done to the once great stallion of America. Through 1,000 lassos, they have brought us down. They have brought down this nation and have left us tied up for the slaughter. It will take an act of God to cut the ropes that bind us as we await the slaughterhouse. The once great stallion of America, tied to the canyon floor by the Lilliputians who have thrown hundreds of rings of rope around us.
Savage.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum wheat. Back in the saddle again.
You're listening to one of my boyhood favorites, Gene Autry singing "Till I'm Back in the Saddle Again." I remember I had a little Victrola. I'm sorry, I'm trying to give you the corny stories, but they're true, every one of them. Turn it off, thanks. So I had a little hand-wound Victrola, and I'd play it. I was five years old, six, I don't know. I'd sit on the floor in the little apartment, get up 5 in the morning before everyone was up and do some mischief or other. But when I got this little phonograph, I would play it over and over and over again. It was the only thing that kept me going was thinking of Gene Autry. But it was the lyrics. Think of the lyrics of "Till I'm Back in the Saddle Again," the wide open plains, the open country, the freedom. It was the opposite of the claustrophobic, horrendous life that I was living. But a kid doesn't know about that. He doesn't know that he's living through claustrophobia. He doesn't know he's living through some kind of horror. All he knows is what he dreams of. So anyway, that song brought me up to the dream of one day living out west. Well, here I now live out west. Wow, is this ever the land of freedom? Is San Francisco ever the land of freedom? Oh, yeah. So I go back again to that movie, the once great stallion of America that I talked about in the end of the movie, The Misfits, with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and Montgomery Clift. But one of the most touching scenes was that after they had tied up the mares and the little colt went over and pawed the mom horse. It was really, I mean, you know, even a strong man would see that and something in him would, I guess, feel it. But then they get the stallion and he puts up a hell of a damn fight. But they win, they get him down, and as they're tying him up and trussing him up, I keep thinking of other men and of other nations who have fallen. That's all I could think about, the metaphor of this movie. I think of the warriors who either get old or tired. Even a man such as Tyson. I saw an amazing documentary again the other night on Mike Tyson, where he sits down in the ring with McBride. He gets hit hard, and he goes down on his butt, and he won't get up. And then they go to his corner and they throw the towel in. At the end of the fight, in front of the whole world, Mike Tyson has the guts to say to the world, "I don't like fighting anymore. I don't have the guts for this game anymore. I don't want to fight anymore. I did it only for the money." It was amazing to watch. And the documentary ends with this great warrior, Mike Tyson, saying that he has changed. He's a different man. He doesn't want to fight anymore. And I said to myself, is that the story of America? Is it that we don't have the guts to fight these dictatorships? Is it that we don't have the guts to fight in us anymore? Is that what's wrong? Where has the fight gone? Oh, you can blame this one. You can blame that one. You can point fingers at yourself if you want. But you have to ask yourself, is that really what's going on here? Is Obama really only a symptom rather than the disease? Is Obama a symptom of America's end? Or is he actually the matador who's going to bring about the end by putting the final sword into our heart underneath the red cape, so to speak? But again, going back to the film I was referring to, The Misfits. So they get the stallion and the mares, and they're all separated across the canyon floor. And then Marilyn Monroe's like crying and screaming. And of course, she's representing the heart and soul, in essence, of people who want the freedom for the animals and for themselves. Because the animals, of course, represent the stallion within us, the wildness within us, the desire to live freely within us. And when the movie came out, remember, in the early 50s, it was almost the beginning of the end of America's freedoms in many, many ways. That's how incredibly typical this movie was or depictive of America at that time. So don't think this just began yesterday under Obama. America's been being tied up for a very long time by the Lilliputians, tying us up in red tape, bureaucracy, tying us up in laws, regulations that nobody wants. Everybody knows that they're crazy. Millions of bureaucrats tying up hundreds of millions of people, and the people slowly but surely winding up tied up on the canyon floor. So the last scene is amazing. The Montgomery Clift character does what she wants, and he races out in the pickup truck to the stallion, and he cuts the ropes around the stallion's legs. And here comes one of the most touching parts of this movie. I think this was real. I don't think that they can make a horse do this. The stallion, when he is freed, runs way back across the canyon floor and goes to his mares, who are tied up on another part of the canyon floor. He goes to them. That horse showed more loyalty than most of us could ever understand. The horse showed more human values than most humans today. I was amazed when I watched this. He didn't think of his own safety. He didn't think of his own freedom and run off into the forests up on the mountains. He ran back to the mares that were tied up left on the canyon floor. It was amazing to me. And then, of course, the rest of the movie is fantasy before it ends. The Clark Gable character, who had just wrestled the stallion down, goes and recaptures the stallion in one of the most phenomenal scenes of a cowboy and a horse I've ever seen in my life. And of course, it was a double. They got a real cowboy fighting a real stallion being dragged along the floor. I couldn't believe it, the canyon floor. I couldn't believe it I was watching. They could never make a movie like that today. But at the end, after he captures the stallion a second time, ties him to the truck, he takes out a pen knife, exhausted, the Clark Gable character, panting, and he cuts the horse loose and it runs away. And he says to the others, I just didn't want anyone telling me what to do and when to do it. The movie The Misfits, never saw it, but to me it struck me as though from heaven itself, as a metaphor of what we're living through here in America. Who are the misfits? It seems to me that the misfits are the government officials, who are cowards, every last one of them, and they work in conjunction with one another, and they tie us up through their tricks and their chicanery. We have an administration that will not enforce the law with regard to the illegal aliens from Mexico, so the people of Arizona want to free themselves from these misfits in the federal government. And the federal government, with all its powers, threatens the people, the freedom-loving people of Arizona. Says, no, we're not going to let you be free. We're going to keep you imprisoned by the illegal aliens who are overrunning your land, bringing in drugs, polluting your beautiful country, killing your ranchers, shooting your sheriffs. No, we're not going to let you be free. We want you to be enslaved by us. So we'll put more ropes around you. And so we wake up to the news. The DHS enforcement chief says, I'm not going to enforce the law. So he's breaking the law. He should be arrested immediately, shouldn't he? No, he's not breaking the law. He's actually enforcing law. Which law? What law? What law are you talking about? He's breaking the federal law on illegal immigration. He's failing to enforce the law. He should be fired. But we have a one-party system. That's the problem. We have a one-party system, and instead of a vigorous press that stands there and says, no, Mr. President, you cannot do this. No, Mr. President, you're breaking the law on our borders when you say a nation is not defined by its borders. No, Mr. President, you can't stab Israel in the back. They are our ally. As flawed as Israel is, Mr. President, they're the best bet we have in the Middle East. Go compare it to life in Syria, Mr. President. But would you expect something else from a man named Hussein? Did you really expect something different from a man whose middle name was Hussein? It was an issue during the campaign, but you were told you were racist if you even noticed his middle name was Hussein. And that perennial schmuck, John McCain, who I'll never forgive for giving us Obama, that despicable rhino McCain had the audacity to say, don't mention his middle name, Hussein. He's a nice man, just like me. He did it to us. But let's stop the finger pointing. We can talk about any of these topics if you want, the metaphor, the horse, the once great stallion of America, my speech, which is the kind of speech that you would have liked to hear from an American statesman, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you love to hear a presidential candidate get up and talk about a movie, The Misfits, instead of this crap that you're hearing from these 10th-rate minds? These 10th-rate minds that are running everything and doing a rotten job at it, by the way. I wouldn't mind if the Lilliputians were able to run the country adequately, but you could see the Lilliputians can't run anything adequately. The Lilliputians can't even run the military. In fact, Robert Gates, the defense secretary, I was shocked to read this. You know, there's a shock a second with this guy. Robert Gates, the defense secretary, who he inherited from Bush, said that he can't defend us. Robert Gates said that our aircraft carriers are vulnerable to the small craft and the missiles of Iran. Robert Gates, our defense secretary, said he cannot defend us, even with the most powerful Navy on Earth. He can't defend us, or he won't defend us? Oh, he could defend us all right. He could defend us. That Hitler of Iran could be ended tomorrow. No. He could defend us, but he won't. Just as Napolitano could be a Homeland Security Secretary, but she won't, which is why she was put there. It's the same reason Gates was put into the Defense Department, because he's not a Defense Secretary. He's another appeaser in the eyes of the owner of the plantation. The plantation owner, Obama, wants those who reflect his appeasement policies and his policies which advance the causes of despotism around the globe. So you see, my friends, that's the kind of speech you've been waiting to hear from candidates, but you will never hear it in the United States of America. You can only hear it on radio, the last hope for America. And I'm going to take a break right now. Thank you.
Savage.
Like the sound of a horse screaming for its life, you would have found that scene refreshing. If, on the other hand, you hear an animal screaming for its life and its freedom, and you can relate to it, because remember, a film is, if it's really great, as The Misfits was with Marilyn Monroe, that was her voice, and Clark Gable, he was amazing in this, as the cowboy bringing in the horses for slaughter, the wild horses of the West at that time. When was it done? 52, 53, whatever. You understand the metaphor, the bigger picture. And many of us can relate to that in a different way today, because we feel like the wild horse that's being roped in by the bureaucracy of Obama. Certainly he's not the first one to put a lasso around our neck, but he may in fact be the one who puts the final tie around all of our body parts and leaves us lying there on the canyon floor for the pickings, the tyrants of the world. At least that's the way it seems to many of us, and we're all not crazy, trust me. Many of us understand that Obama's weakness on the world stage, where he keeps appeasing Iran and gets humiliated over and over again. He appeases Russia over and over again. He appeases Syria over and over again. He appeases the Venezuelan dictator Chavez over and over again. In every case, he takes the side of those who stand not with us for human rights and human freedom, but against human rights and human freedom. Don't you understand the paradox here? Many of you are so duped that you think because he says he's in favor of human rights, he is. Mugabe of Africa claims he's a human rights activist. The Chinese claim they believe in human rights. Hitler said he was a man who believed in human rights. Stalin said he believed in human rights. So you're going to believe them because they say they're in favor of human rights? When in fact, watch what they do, not what they say. It's an old adage. No, my friends, many of us fear that this could be the last roundup. That's why I played this piece from The Misfits. And again, I mean, I just caught this by chance. You know, I'm a big movie watcher. And I'd never seen the movie somehow when I was a kid. I didn't want to watch it. I don't know why. I just didn't relate to it. I was never a big Marilyn Monroe fan to begin with. Little did I know what a really amazing actress this woman was. I didn't even see her in this movie as a sex goddess. I saw her as a phenomenally emoting actress. Astounding. When she screams, "Let them go, why are you killing them?" It cuts right through the screen. That's the mark of acting. That's the mark of acting. Not falling over on Sunset Boulevard while you're drugged up with your skirts over your head. Or putting out another trashy perfume. This is acting. 1961, The Misfits. 1961. Pennsylvania. Andrea, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. That was one of my favorite Marilyn Monroe movies. It was her last picture. It was Clark Gable's last picture. It was Montgomery Clift's last picture. And she was married to Arthur Miller, the screenplay writer at the time.
Right. But the point that I'm making is not so much about the actors and the actresses, the actress. What is the point I am making by bringing up this scene from The Misfits?
I understand the point. You're such a man. The testosterone opinion, I really appreciate.
what did you just say? The testosterone opinion?
Yes, that's you. You're full.
No, I like it. That's very good. I'll use it on my next book, unless someone steals it right now. Let one of the Lilliputians steal it before it comes out. 1-800-449-8255. Utah, Sharon, welcome to the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Hi there. I want to bring up the fact that the Misfits still live on. They're just
they
under
do.
A different name.
Yes.
BLM.
Bureau of Land Management. Do they round up the ponies and put them in cans of dog food?
Dr. Savage, I watch video after video, and I just get sick because these stallions and these mares, they're in a family, and they break them up. They bring them to the rounding pens, and they're not used to being in those pens. They're free. They want to be free. I don't know how to get in touch with you so I can send you these videos. There was a horse.
So why are they still rounding up the horses and putting them into cans of dog food?
Oh, they say because there isn't enough range. These horses were way back in 1971. They've been protected by a bill.
So who was it who suddenly changed the law permitting horses to be rounded up, wild Mustangs to be shot from airplanes and put into cans of dog food?
I wish I could answer that, but let's ask Mr. Salazar.
Oh, Mr. Salazar, the man who was rafting while the oil was oozing, huh?
I want to tell you, I have never in my life, I just sit here crying watching these videos. People go out there that love these horses, and they give up their time, and they video as much as they can. You would be amazed. I wish
Well, I understand, but I don't want to get sidetracked to the horses, although that's an important issue. We are the horses. The American people are the Mustangs of the plain. We are the ones being roped by the federal government, is my point, Sharon. I'm sure you get it. It's a kind of gross analogy, but I think it's quite apt, don't you?
Yes, I do. I get it. I definitely.
Yeah, we are the horses being roped by Obama. We are the horses who've had nooses put around our neck by Bush, and now all of our collective appendages are tied together, and we're waiting to be picked up by who? The Saudis, the Chinese, the Russians? I mean, who's defending us?
Amen, Dr. Savage. Amen.
And I see a story that our Defense Secretary Gates has the astounding statement that he cannot defend us. Cannot defend us. That, here it is, I'm not making it up. Gates last week said in a speech that the U.S. Navy is facing asymmetric warfare threats, and he questioned whether naval forces that are very expensive should be pared back. In other words, we don't need aircraft carriers. That's the new Obama military doctrine. Let's get rid of the aircraft carriers, the way he got rid of NASA, the way he wants to get rid of our nuclear arsenal. Now let's get rid of our aircraft carriers. You know, I'm a member of the Navy League, and I wasn't at that speech. But Defense Secretary Gates goes and says to the Navy League on May 3rd that the U.S. enemies are investing in weapons designed to neutralize U.S. advantages, to deny our military freedom of action, blah, 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 blah. And he says, so therefore, maybe we should minimize the number of aircraft carriers that we have. And he said they have anti-ship cruise and ballistic missiles that can strike our ships from over the horizon. And who is the main developer of these weapons? Why, it's our good friend China. So we have aircraft carriers that cost between $15 to $20 billion when you add up the full complement of the latest aircraft, $15 to $20 billion on a ship. And our defense secretary says they are vulnerable to attack. Well, I say that the defense secretary is the problem, not the ship. And the reason I say that is because our ships could strike the enemy right now. Our ships have the capacity right now to take out any of the assets that the despots are putting in place. They could strike, and strike again. They could launch one wing of an F-A-18 squadron and take out every one of these emplacements along the Iranian coast. So, Mr. Gates, you're the problem, not the enemy.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about Obama's weakness on the world stage. I've given you a list of seven distinct areas of weakness. I then talked about the once great stallion of America in the end of a movie called The Misfits with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and Montgomery Clift, and the metaphor of the stallion being the people of America being tied up and ensnared by the Lilliputians known as the Obama administration. I then asked you a question. What do you fear most about the Obama administration? And many of you have been flooding the lines. I haven't taken many of your calls on it because my stallion metaphor, I think, struck a raw nerve. So I'll continue to take your calls on do you fear the Obama administration and what do you fear most at 1-800-449-8255. Or you can go to michaelsavage.com if you need some examples of why you should fear the Obama administration if you're still in the dark. There are many, many examples up there, and I didn't write any of these stories. These are linked from major reputable news sources around the world. I can start by telling you that Obama has attempted to appease Iran over and over again. We kept hearing from Hillary Clinton that she was going to stop Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. It seems to me that the Obama administration has de facto acknowledged that Iran will have a nuclear weapon. So they stabbed Israel in the back, and despite Israel's flaws, and there are quite a few, by the way, they are our best bet in the Middle East. Plus, there are cultural ties to Israel that I think we should not ignore. But aside from the fact, those facts that I mentioned, tell me what we have going for us with regard to Wahhabi Islam being disseminated by the royal family of Saudi Arabia. Wahhabi Islam is a violent, fundamentalist sect of Islam that holds no favor with any other religion. That's the predominant Islam that is being exported around the world, the Wahhabi sect of Islam, something you're not supposed to know about, something you're not supposed to hear about, something you're not supposed to notice. But virtually every terrorist act that we have been subjected to, or every terrorist act that was interrupted, can be traced to this radical sect of Islam and their fellow travelers in Al-Qaeda. And so therefore, although the government tells you that radical Islam is not involved in terrorism, everyone knows that that's a bald-faced lie. And so if you'd like to talk about that, you can. And while you're thinking about what you'd like to say to millions of people here on the Savage Nation, I'd like to play two quick sound bites from The Misfits starring Marilyn Monroe, whose voice you will hear, and Clark Gable. Listen.
Why are you killing him?
Just stand aside, honey.
Okay, you won. All right, you won. You
let
won.
Let go of that rope. Get out of here.
Hey, darling.
Pull him. Choke him down, Guido. Get off me, Roger.
Stop.
Get him. Roger, shut up and pull that horse down. Get on. One, two, go.
Well, I guess coming up here for the first time like her, there might not seem one sets to it at that. With only five horses, not knowing how it used to be. I never thought of it, but I guess the fewer you kill, the worse it looks.
The fewer you kill, the worse it looks. Chilling, chilling, chilling. Chilling, chilling, chilling. Obama's weakness on the world stage. 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin with the callers on do you fear the Obama administration and what do you fear specifically? Gloria, Miami, you're the first up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. My biggest fear is to lose the freedom that we enjoy in America and what America stands for. And what I wanted to say to you is I wish that you would call for the people who love freedom and this country to unite regardless of their ethnic background, because that makes your point stronger.
But Gloria, it's very difficult to call for people to unite when they're so divided. Obama is the great divider. I am telling you right now, this man has turned Americans against Americans, brother against sister, a mother against daughter. He has divided this country in a way it hasn't been divided since the Civil War. He is not a Lincoln. He is a divider. He wants us divided because he is a very clever man. And he and his minions know that when you divide a people, you can conquer them. Am I right about that, Gloria?
Michael, that's what happened in Cuba. I'm going to be 68. I left when I was 19. I've seen this nightmare already, and I suffered through it, and I came here because I love the country, because I admire, and now I see everything at risk, because when they divide, they conquer.
Well, what I'm saying, okay, do you know who came out today attacking the Arizona law and calling us a racist nation? Your ex-dictator boss, Fidel Castro, who agrees with Obama and agrees with Napolitano. It is Fidel Castro, the mass murderer, who now agrees with our administration. That should be very worrisome, Gloria, should it not?
That shouldn't surprise you because they share the same ideology, and the purpose is to confuse and to divide and to make democracy and the good people of America look like oppressors. So you see how dangerous this is, more dangerous than you could ever imagine, Michael.
But how many, look, I know this, Gloria, and millions of Americans know this, but how many of the young Cubans who were born here, of people who fled Cuba, really even understand this anymore?
Some of them don't, because we have failed to educate them. We have failed to educate America about love of country, about who we are, and that's what we're suffering now. They don't even
Gloria,
know.
Gloria, you know how many years I've been in radio since 1994, and you know what I've been calling for? I've been saying borders, language, culture. And do you know, ever since I coined that phrase, I have been called every name under the sun by the illegitimate left. They have tried to smear me. They have taken my words out of context. I have suffered more than any other host in America. Remember, I am banned in England, and if people think that's nothing, they are mistaken. I've been fighting a government all by myself for well over a year now. The fact of the matter is they have gone after me. I'm not waiting for tomorrow. I'm living it today. I know who these people are.
Michael, don't stop with your message. You're the only hope. I admire you. I have been listening to you for the past 2 years. My biggest fight against the communists I had in this country took place in Market and Powell.
Market and Powell in San Francisco?
My son was living in San Francisco. I go there every 2 or 3 months. I was going, and I had the biggest argument with a bunch of communists, you know, in Market and Powell. And I was.
You know, Gloria, it's funny you should say it. I have a friend who is an ex-Soviet Union from Poland, and he tells me the people who talk most beautifully about Marxism with misty eyes are the liberals from Berkeley who have never lived under a Marxist regime, but they read about it in books. Does that sound familiar to you, Gloria, the stupid idiots, the useful fools?
Of course, Michael. I'm telling you, and you cannot stop doing what you're doing. I love you dearly. I wish I could meet you one day. You're my hero, and I admire you for being brave and explaining things that are true. You're not demented. You know what you're talking about, okay?
Gloria, hasta la victoria siempre, if you know what I mean.
God bless you, Michael.
We'll turn around the bearded one's rhetoric on him. But you see, they are in the ascent. Make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen. We are not finished at all. They have just begun. Obama's a very young man. He's only been in power for 18 short months. And look at what wreckage he has left behind him already. 18 months. And now he wants to foist upon the U.S. Supreme Court one of the most terrible human beings imaginable. Elena Kagan, who they dressed up, gussied up, perfumed, put a new dress on her, took away the basketballs, put a wig on her, and they want us to believe that although they put pearls on this human being, she is not the radical leftist that we all know her to be. A woman who has written paper after paper attacking the First Amendment, attacking the Second Amendment, and we're supposed to believe the illegitimate press, which tells us that she's a centrist. And of course, you understand that we have no party to represent us. Oh, there are valiant fighters within the Republican Party. I can name them on one hand, but most of them are go-along, get-along kind of guys. That's the problem. They have no fire in their belly. They are the stallion who has long ago been turned into a gelding. They are the Republican Party of yesterday, not of today. The gelding Republican Party would be more accurate, not the Republican Party with fire in his nostrils. I'll be right back. Life, to life, to life. This is the Savage Nation. That's the metaphor for this program. And of course, we are all fighting for our lives here under the Obama administration, who seems to be out to get us, in plain English. I have illuminated for you the 7 weaknesses of Obama on the world stage. Each of them is real. The humiliation of America by Iran, the humiliation of America by Russia, the humiliation of America by Syria, the humiliation of America wherever you turn, even by Hugo Chavez in South America. Wherever you look, we see humiliation. We see a supineness unheard of in American history. And you have to ask yourself, how can this be happening without an outcry from the American people? How can one man, an unknown senator, literally an unknown senator as near as 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, virtually unknown, how can one unknown senator come along out of nowhere and do this to us? Well, the answer is he is only one in a long line of deceivers. He didn't come from nowhere. George Bush was in this great tradition of doing this to us. I called George Bush a fiscal socialist. I have to keep reminding you, several years ago, many of you stopped listening to the program because, let's face it, many of you were easily duped by the label Republican. Many of you thought George Bush was a genuine conservative. I knew otherwise. I knew the history of the Bush clan going back to Daddy Bush. And the fact of the matter is, I saw Laura Bush's behavior, and I knew all along that she was the type who was truly a stealth liberal Democrat. She certainly has shown that to be true when the other day she came out and said she's glad that Kagan will be on the Supreme Court. Not because of her policy, she said, but because she's a woman. She's a woman, and that's sufficient for her to be on the Supreme Court? That alone is enough to justify her going on the Supreme Court? Not because she likes her politics or she detests her politics? So in other words, if she hates her politics because they're too liberal, that doesn't matter because she's a woman? It's not about her being a woman. It's because Laura Bush, as you well know, was guiding the president at that time along the lines of a liberal democracy. Now, you say, well, what's wrong with liberalism, really? I mean, it really, what does liberalism really mean? It means live and let live. It means leave people alone. It doesn't mean that. I'm actually a liberal by that definition. I say leave me alone. I say leave you alone. I say I want the government out of my life. They're not liberals. They don't even call themselves liberals. They're radicals. They're progressives. Kagan says that the First Amendment is all well and good and fine if she agrees with what's written or what is said. But if she doesn't agree with what is written or what is said, she believes the government has a right to enforce a censorship on those saying or writing things that the government doesn't agree with. That's called a dictatorship. Second Amendment, she says, well, I guess it's okay in some cases. I don't see how you people don't see what's going on. I do, and I'm certainly not the only one. Look at what's going on in the ballot box. There's a revolution, but you wouldn't know it because the Fourth Estate has become the fifth column, as I said over and over again. What do I mean by that? I'm not going to explain the fifth column again. I did it yesterday. What I mean by that is every candidate Obama has gone on the road for, going back to Massachusetts, has lost. He is 4-0. He is the most toxic candidate for the Democrat Party. He cannot appear at a fundraiser without crashing the chances of that candidate. In fact, Obama is probably the most unpopular president in American history 18 months into his administration. But you wouldn't know that because the polls are rigged, the newspapers are rigged, and you don't really know what's going on. But some of us can read through the fog of war, and make no mistake about it, you are in a war. You're in a war for your own survival. You're in a war for the survival of your family. And you are in a war for the survival of your nation itself. Borders, language, culture. The battle going on in Arizona, of course, is actually a very good battle. Because as it turns out, most Americans agree with the law in Arizona. In fact, many states are trying to copy the law in Arizona. In fact, that's because they have to do what the federal government does not want to do, because the federal government is trying to dissolve our border with Mexico in order to make this a North American union, in order to create the Frankenstein called the North American Union. The very same Frankenstein that has almost destroyed the euro, called the Eurozone. That Frankenstein is dying right now. And yet these microcephalics in the Obama administration cannot even look to Europe and see what this amalgamation of nations has wrought. When you take hardworking people and you make them responsible for bums and parasites, what happens is the parasites drag down the hardworking people. The hardworking people never bring up the parasites. When you suddenly cater to the lazy and the criminal, what you wind up doing is you weaken the nation. You don't strengthen it. So when we hear the fancy rhetoric from the illiberal left that we must take care of the most vulnerable in our society and on, we've all heard it, you know that that's a big lie. Because the most vulnerable in our society, in fact, today, is the middle class. The middle class, the man plus woman plus children, the picket fence family, the nuclear family, the atomic family, is the most vulnerable element of American society. Every other class of society is protected one way or the other. Every other class of society is revered one way or another. Every other class of society is held up as a role model in one way or another. When have you last seen a mother and a father and two or more children struggling to make ends meet and doing it, thank you, without the help of the government? When have you last seen Ozzie and Harriet held up as a role model by any of the vermin in the liberal media? Tell me the last time the vermin in the liberal media have dared show Ozzie and Harriet without fearing what the perverts who work in the back room will say of them. It's the devious demons in the media who have done this to us. That's right. I will say it over and over again until you finally understand what's going on. The demons, the devils, the Antichrist, whatever you want to put it, any way you want to put it, make no mistake about it. I believe the devil exists. And I believe that the devil is in the media.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. So look, I've been having a nightmare so far of you know, our fears about Obama, but it is the weekend coming up, and many of us are going to be trying to enjoy ourselves because, as you know, living well is the best revenge. I mean, I didn't say that. I think who wrote it's you can never be too thin or too rich. Of course, that all may come to an end very soon as well. You know, taxation was once 90% in the United States of America. And I am pretty sure that this Marxist will bring us back to that level where every dollar you earn, let's say you're a wealthy person, you're going to give 90 cents of that dollar so the bums and the lazy at the bottom can you know, live off you, in other words, in plain English. What that does is it makes people either stop working, stop building factories, stop creating jobs, and or they leave the country. There's an article about Mick Jagger saying that when he became rich and famous, he had to leave England because the taxation rate at that time was 90%. So he had to leave England. I think he moved to France where the taxes were lower. God only knows where the taxes are lower, but that could happen. We have to go around and around in cycles, and right now we're in a radical left-wing cycle. But as I say, it's a weekend. Many of us are going to go to restaurants. So there's an interesting article in the local paper about when you know you're in a bad restaurant. You know when you're in a bad restaurant when. Signs of a subpar restaurant. I was looking at some of it. It was very funny. When you're the only one who can speak Chinese in a Chinese restaurant. When the wine list looks like a Safeway aisle. When it's Friday night at 8 and the place is as quiet as a mouse. When you come into an empty restaurant and the host leads you to the worst seat in the house. Or when fried calamari is on the menu. I mean, I don't agree with all of this, by the way. There are some of the things that are very funny. Very funny. You know, the other one is a guy says, my name is so forth and blah, blah, blah. When you notice that two out of the four water glasses on your table have bits of food or lipstick and greasy fingerprints along the rim before the water is poured. When the table is off kilter and you have to shim it up yourself. I've had a lot of those. When the restaurant is completely empty, when I see the kitchen staff taking a smoke break and their chef's whites. And I mean, I don't agree with that. Why can't a kitchen staff smoke outside when the word fresh is in quotation marks? Well, there are other pet peeves in restaurants, but come on, let's not be spoiled Bay Area snobs here around America. Frankly, I like fried calamari. I don't know why that would be a red flag for a bad restaurant. Truthfully, I don't get it. Another thing is this. If you go to Safeway today, there are wines on the top shelf locked up in Safeway that are like $150 a bottle. What are they talking about? So I don't quite get it. I mean, there are some things here that are not snobby that are true. One of them would be when the waiters refer to themselves as wait staff, you leave immediately. When you see on the menu inspired or in such as Tuscan inspired sauce, run as fast as you can. Let's see, ratings I don't go for. There are many, many other. How about children in a restaurant? You want to talk about that? How about when you walk in a restaurant and there's an actual children's menu, leave as fast as you can, unless you have children with you, which I don't. I went through that phase already. I mean, if you have children, take them to a Roy Rogers, by the way. When the host tells you it will be 15 minutes with no reservation and then seats everyone else clearly with no reservation before you. How about cheap, thin paper napkins? How about dirty menus? How about whiteout or correction tape on menus? When prices have changed, you don't see that much anymore. Dirty salt and pepper shakers, yes. The words catch of the day on the menu. A category called healthy choices, implying that the balance of the menu is unhealthy. Sound of AM Mexican radio blaring from the kitchen, particularly when an Italian or Thai restaurant. Yeah, that's true. No question about it. So, photos of the owner with, quote, celebrities on the wall. The majority of whom are unrecognizable. Have you ever seen those? Let's see. Dirty bathrooms. Forget about it. I mean, you really can't tell a restaurant by a bathroom. I don't get that part of it. How about when you go into a restaurant bathroom after the chef has gone in and the sink is dried? Does that bother you at all? Would you stay in the restaurant? You go in the bathroom. The chef went in before you, right? And he leaves the bathroom. You're next. And you go in and the sink is dry. He didn't run the tap. What does that tell you? How about dirty fingernails on food servers? How about earrings and nose rings on food servers in San Francisco? You like that one? Let's see what else. You know you're going into a subpar restaurant when? How about an all-you-can-eat sushi bar run by Italians? Or how about Italian restaurants run by Asians? There are many in San Francisco like that. They call themselves Pan-Asian. Or any restaurant that's called a fusion restaurant. You know you're going to need a fusion stomach pump when you leave. I can tell you that. You're going to need a fusion stomach pump when you go into a fusion. What means fusion? It really means confusion. I've been saying that for years. Whenever you see fusion, it means they don't know what they are. Confusion. Any other questions about food? Or I actually am thinking about doing a weekend restaurant show on my website just because I'm bored, where I webcast a dinner with Michael kind of thing. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I have an idea for it already. I'm not trying to put it together. I need, you know, but I have ideas all the time. I'm too busy with the books and the radio. I don't have time for all of it. But then the weekend comes and I get bored and I go to restaurants and I laugh because exactly what I just was reading to you happens. So I wind up reheating leftover Chinese food at home, which I did last night. It wasn't really that bad. But a salt attack, that's the problem. No matter what you say to them, the general manager came out. Yes, I'll make sure, radio guy, blah, blah. My fingers blew up like I injected Viagra into each finger. I woke up in the morning, it looked like each finger was a football. Again, I knew what it was, the salt. I knew it was going down. Or I say to them, no sugar, and they give you a candy sauce. Ugh, it's a chain Chinese. I mean, can I name it? Why should I name it? I'm going to have to eat there again. I don't want to get poisoned altogether. You got to watch out for the chain ethnic restaurants to begin with. You know, how, I mean, how good can the quality be? I only trust a restaurant personally unless if there's a patron who owns it in the front. The owner is up front. I know that, you know, he's there to watch the register, yes, because he knows the business is getting clipped. Every time he blinks or goes to the bathroom, it costs him $50. That I can guarantee you. There's a conspiracy. He knows it. It's like Napoleon on board the ship going to exile. He knows that all of them are smiling at him. The minute he blinks, they're going to rip him off. But he's also there to watch the food, you know. It's a rough business. Oh, how many times I've thought of going into the restaurant business. You know, oh, I'm a famous radio show host. If I had a restaurant, they'd come, you know, they would. I know that. They would. What a business, though. Everyone I know who owns one says, don't do it. Don't go in the business. I mean, it's one thing to go there and, you know, be a guest. It's another thing to try and run it. I don't know how they do it. Have you ever tried to cook for three people at once and make everything come out on time? I think it's a miracle that they can do it. You're at a table with five people and everyone orders something different. How they can orchestrate five different kind of meals, I'll never understand it. One has a steak, the other has a crab, the other has a fish, the other this. And everything comes out at the same time hot. It's a miracle. I don't know how they do it with hundreds of people. I could never in my life understand this business. Doesn't mean, you know, everyone thinks they can, you know, like everyone thinks they can own a restaurant, right? Everyone thinks they can fill in the blank, write a book. Everyone thinks they can make a movie. Everyone listening to the show thinks they have a movie script. That if only they knew a Hollywood, they'd have the movie on the big screen. Everyone listening has a movie script. Everyone listening can run a restaurant. And of course, everyone listening knows how easy it is to do talk radio. Why, you just get up there and shoot your mouth off, right? It's easy, real easy. It's easy for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for 16 years and see an audience growing. Oh, it's easy. And everyone can write a book. Oh, yeah. Very easy to put out a book. Oh, yeah. Very easy. Everything's easy till you try it. So it's easy to bash a restaurant. Now it gets back to Obama. Maybe we're too harsh on the young man who's trying to save America. After all, he's just trying to run a country. It doesn't matter that he's never done anything before. Give him a chance. I mean, he's trying. Isn't that important? So he figures he'll try at first the rule book he read along the way, written by, all of the favorite authors that he had, Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin, some of Trotsky's missives. And he'll try all of those techniques. Mr. Frankfurt wrote one of the Frankfurt School. He read some of that literature. We don't have to mention the obvious, the Saul Alinsky. That's baby stuff. You know, Saul Alinsky's the new bug. Oh, Saul. You know, if you say Saul Alinsky, everyone thinks that you're Albert Einstein. So he tries. So what if he can't do it right? Doesn't matter. He's trying. It doesn't matter that he's making mistakes one after the other. What's important is that he's the first ethnic president we've had and that he's trying very hard. So he tried the appeasement school with Iran and he's been humiliated over and over again. That doesn't matter. And Hillary Clinton, she didn't matter. She tried appeasing Russia over and over again, right? And so the Ukraine was forced to extend its lease on a Black Sea naval base. And he forced Russia forced him to give in over Georgia. And Russia annexed Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Well, so they made a mistake. But look, give him a chance. They're trying to run the restaurant, right? So Obama's appeased Syria. Well, he tried. He thought that by appeasing the dictator of Syria, Iran's puppet, it would work. And he even slapped Britain over the Falkland Islands, again trying to appease I guess the country in South America that claims it owns the Falkland Islands. And so he stabbed Israel in the back over and over again until eventually the rich Jewish donors said, wait a minute, what are we, hello, we vote, we gave him money. We ran fundraisers from Beverly Hills to Brooklyn. We ran fundraisers for him. How could he do that to us? Then they have the nerve to say he's delusional. And I would say, no, they're delusional. No, they're the delusional ones. I mean, what'd they expect with a man whose middle name was Hussein, that they'd be he'd be in favor of Israel? His middle name wasn't Isaac. His middle name wasn't Barack Isaac Obama, was it? Was his middle name Barack Abraham Obama? Was his middle name Barack Abraham Obama or Barack Hussein Obama? I mean, you can tell an awful lot by a middle name. My middle name is Allen. I'm Michael Allen Savage. That's right. So I'm not shocked that Obama was passive as a Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, the favorite dictator of that psychotic, delusional fool from Hollywood, whatever his name is, Sean Penn. The man is deepening military and commercial ties with the despot, the Hitler of Iran and with Russia, and building up the revolution right beneath our in front of our eyes. Well, Obama's trying. He's trying by letting him go along his merry way. Thought that perhaps Chavez would be a good man. And so the thing is that you've got to give him a chance. Although he's a novice at the business of being president, he's trying. He's trying the same way his wife Michelle is trying different dresses to see which is perhaps the most laughable. She's trying to be first lady. Of course, she doesn't understand that we don't want a first lady to try to be sexy, especially when you can't be sexy. Who ever heard of a first lady that wants to be sexy? I never heard of such a thing. The object is to be classy, not sexy. She could be classy if she stopped trying to be sexy instead of wearing a dress with a shoulder hanging off. I don't understand that part, but give them a break. After all, they're the first minority couple in the White House, and you have to cut them a little slack. And you have to understand that they're trying their best. They're trying their best, and eventually they'll get their feet. Right now, they're still just trying. It doesn't matter that we're losing, and that we're all losing our freedom, and we're losing our status in the world, and our military is being cut down, NASA's being destroyed. It doesn't matter. What's important is that you give him a chance. Why? Because he's trying. Be nice. I'll be back.
Savage.
You saw the union thugs outside a bank executive's home in Maryland. You saw the union thugs threatening the president, the bank manager, and his family. And it turns out today that the police in D.C. actually worked hand in glove with the union thugs when they were bussed out to the home. This is something out of Venezuela or Cuba, this kind of union thug thing. And it's only the beginning of what Obama's going to do with his shock troops in the unions. It's only the beginning. Let us see. Oil hits Miami. That's right. Your good friend Obama. And again, give him a break. I mean, cut him some slack. It doesn't matter that he's failing on the world stage. I mean, he's trying. The oil spill is reaching Miami. He tried his best. I mean, he can't do anything. If it was a Republican, of course, the oil would be bad. But because it's Democrat oil, it's good oil. Just same with the war in Afghanistan. Although the war in Iraq was bad because it was a Republican war. The war in Afghanistan is actually, well, if it's not a good war exactly to the libs, it's not really a bad war either because Obama's behind it, therefore it's a good war. It's the same with the oil spill. If it had been a Republican in power, it would be a catastrophe unlike any seen in the history of the world. But because it's happened under Obama's leadership, if you want to call it that, it's not really a bad oil spill. It's an unfortunate oil spill, yes. Yes, it is. But the fact of the matter is, it's not a catastrophe. It's not a catastrophic oil spill because it's a Democrat oil spill. And although we have an Interior Secretary who did nothing, a FEMA Secretary who did nothing, a Homeland Security Secretary who did nothing, it's not really a catastrophe yet. Even if it enters the Intracoastal Waterway and goes up the artery right into the Carolinas, it wouldn't be a catastrophe because he's trying. And cut him some slack. He's a young guy. It's a young family. And he's trying, darn it. Don't you remember it took him months to learn how to walk up the steps of Air Force One without looking embarrassed that he had wound up doing this. He was shocked the first few months. He kept looking back and gulping. Like, oh, my God. How the heck did we pull this off? I didn't know Rahm was that good. I had no idea that this would happen. Well, he learned how to button up that tie and button up the coat. He learned they trained him to wave like Reagan did, as though someone's actually looking at him. Now he looks like he belongs on Air Force One. And he's learned to boss people around. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He knows they snap. He snaps his fingers and they jump. And so, therefore, this is not such a catastrophe. It's only an oil spill. And once the oil from the Gulf enters the loop current, a powerful current that might carry the mess of oil into the Florida Keys and up the state's Atlantic coast, damaging coral reefs and fouling beaches, why then, you understand, it's not his fault. He tried. The important thing is that Obama tried. And he's a busy man. He has so much to do. After all, what could he do? He's only president. Can't do very much about the oil spill. He tried. I mean, they're so busy making certain that illegal aliens flood into America and those nasty Arizonans don't get any traction. How can he focus on the oil? So in other words, although he doesn't want the illegal aliens to be stopped, he certainly wants the oil to be controlled, but he's too busy trying to make certain that the illegal aliens are not stopped in order to stop the oil. And so therefore, the oil continues to threaten an even larger swath of America. And, of course, the illegal aliens continue to come in greater numbers than ever because they know, wink, wink, nod, nod, that Janet Napolitano, Barack Obama, Eric Holder, well, they're all on their side. They represent a foreign government. In that sense, why they represent a foreign government? Every poll in America says we want the border secured. Every poll says we want the illegals to be stopped at the border, thank you. But if the illegals know that the president and the chief justice official and the Homeland Security is on their side, why should they stop coming? So they're waving to their friends, come on in. Come on in. The government's on our side. Come across the border. Come across the border for the easy life. Come live on the fat of the land. That's right. Even though you get caught raping or murdering or killing or driving drunk and running four girls over, the liberals will always be on your side. They'll always blame it on the gringo, not on you. Come on in. The water's fine. Everybody, come on in. The government's on your side. The people be damned. The people have been tied up like a mare. The people have been tied up like a mare in the movie, as I told you earlier. Tied up like the mare and the stallion in that movie. The Misfits with Marilyn Monroe and Clark Gable. The people have been tied up. They're afraid to say a word about you. Because we have a ready vocabulary for the gringo. And we have all those Marvin friends from NYU and Harvard and Bolt Law School. The same ones who defend the terrorists, they're on our side. Oh, that's right. Every time an Arab terrorist is caught, an Islamo-fascist terrorist is caught, well, whatever they call them, not even called terrorist anymore. They're not allowed to even use the word terrorist with regard to Islamo-fascist. So they can't call you an illegal alien. They're calling you an undocumented citizen. And so therefore, anybody who doesn't like you, we have all of the Marvins from law school, all the Marvins ready to sue on our behalf. So come on in. The water's fine. Bring in the whole family because you have the ACLU on your side and you have Holder on your side and you have Hussein on your side and you have Napolitano on your side. The people be damned because they're like the stallion and the mares in the Misfits. We tied up their legs. And they're just laying there on a canyon floor, waiting for the cannery.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen. We are and will continue being respectful of the internal policies of the United States and its legitimate right to establish, in accordance to its constitution, whatever laws it approves. But we will retain our firm rejection to criminalize migration so that people that work and provide things to this nation will be treated as criminals. And we oppose firmly the SB 1070 Arizona law, given in fair principles that are partial and discriminatory.
Rock and roll is here to stay. It will never die.
The big news today is that what Michael Savage has been saying for 15 years about borders, language, and culture has basically come to the mainstream media. We recognize that Obama's sedition is even becoming apparent to his most ardent supporters. And what I mean by that is, here he is, he invites Felipe Calderon of Mexico to talk about violating a U.S. immigration law, and the Democrat Party cheers. His chief of enforcement says he's not going to deport illegals who are rounded up by Arizona, even if they're felons. It gets worse by the day. If a foreign government had taken over America, I don't think they could undermine America as fast as this team is doing so. Let me go further. Obama advisor Brennan, the assistant to the president and deputy national security advisor for Homeland Security and counterterrorism, John Brennan, says in a speech in Saudi Arabia, he talks about Jerusalem. He refers to it as Al-Quds in the Arabic. He refers to Jerusalem for the first time by a U.S. official by the Arabic name Al-Quds. Can you believe this? Can you believe what is going on? Also, if you look at Obama's weakness on the world stage, I have a list. Really? You mean he's been weak, Mr. Obama the radical? One, he's attempted to appease Iran and been humiliated over and over again. Each rejected offer was met abjectly with renewed U.S. negotiating overtures. Two, Russia gave in to Russia's sphere of influence in Eastern Europe over Ukraine, who was pressured by Russia last month into extending its lease on a Black Sea naval base, and over Georgia. Russia's annexation of Abkhazia and South Ossetia is no longer a problem, according to Obama and Hillary's reset policy. You want to hear more about Obama's weakness on the world stage? List number three. Obama has appeased Syria, Iran's puppet. Four, Obama has gratuitously slapped at Britain over the Falkland Islands. Five, Obama has treated Israel contemptuously, undercut the Czech Republic and Poland, and treated Lebanon and Georgia with indifference. Six, Obama has been passive as Venezuela's Hugo Chavez has organized his anti-American Bolivarian coalition while deepening military and commercial ties with Iran and Russia. Seven, Obama has supported a pro-Chavez would-be dictator in Honduras, seeking unconstitutional powers in defiance of the democratic institutions of that nation. But you see, this is not by accident. All of this is the perfect fulfillment of the narrative that Obama adopted for the Third World. Obama sees himself as the redeemer of America's historical misdeeds, disrespect, and domination. And this is why he decided at the UN last year, quote, that not one nation nor one nation can or should try to dominate another nation. He is the enemy within. He is, and everybody knows that he's the radical enemy within. He is surrounded by enemies within. That's what I'm saying. Remember, borders, language, culture. When Napolitano and the others will not support our borders, our language, or our culture, tell me who they are supporting. Who? Who? You don't know the answer to that one? Well, we'll make it pretty clear for you. How about the rat and the radical? Yesterday, as Obama spoke, a rat scurried out in front of the teleprompter. Can you believe this? A rat. A rat scurries in front of the podium. What better symbol could there be of an administration which contains this group of seditious individuals? Huh? You think it's not a joke? The rats are on the rise in Washington. And sometimes, even the dumb people can see a rat. John Brennan calls Israel Al-Quds. The head of the Homeland Security Enforcement Division says he's not going to arrest any of the felonious drug dealers who might be turned over by Arizona. The fruits of weakness, some are calling it. I would just call it weakness. That's all I would call it. Just call it like it is. Call it weakness. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. In my opinion, Obama's trying to destroy the entrepreneurial spirit of America, the American dream. Fortunately, that spirit is alive and well in my advertisers, blinds.com. This is an amazing company. They put beautiful blinds in my kitchen at an amazing price. You have to check out blinds.com. Let's go to the regular stories on michaelsavage.com, the meat and potatoes of talk radio here. Rubini says stocks are going to tumble another 20%. Cash is the safest place. Federal officials are saying Europe's crisis is posing a risk to the USA. There's new regulation, but the fact of the matter is the regulation of the banks is a toothless tiger. It permits those who raped America to continue to eat the spoils. The German lawmakers have approved a rescue package for Greece, bailing them out with euros. A paper in England says the euro, as we know it, is dead. 775 U.S. banks are on a list of problem banks. And the Democrats keep spending as the band played on. The Titanic is going down and the band plays on. Let's have a little rock and roll for the minute on the Savage Nation. I don't want to bum people out, you know. I'd like to talk about some nice things. The illegitimate far-left wing of the Democrat Party under Nancy Pelosi has the audacity to push through another $200 billion spending bill. That's what she's doing now in the midst of all of this? That's what she's doing now. Yes, in the midst of all of this. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please? It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
Whenever celebrities express their opinions on controversial topics, they take risks, big risks, with their careers. That's why movie mogul Jack Warner said, "If you want to give a message, send a telegram." But when Laker coach Phil Jackson expressed tacit approval of Arizona's new immigration law, the Los Angeles press blew their collective fuses. Torn between being leftists and being Laker fans apparently creates a cognitive problem with these folks. Smoke could be seen coming out of the ears of reporters, politicians, and public union members all over the left coast. In fact, Los Angeles Times movie critic Tim Rutten could not restrain himself from using his column to write a piece that was not about cinema, but instead dedicated to chastising a basketball coach. In the piece, Rutten urged Phil Jackson and the Laker team to join the Phoenix Suns in denouncing the new Arizona law, despite the fact that the movie critic is a diehard Laker lover and has been since he was a kid. The angst of LA liberals who love the Lakers started when the Suns owner and players declared solidarity with the liberal opponents of the Arizona law and wore jerseys that read Los Suns during a game on Cinco de Mayo. Suns star Steve Nash, who is a two-time NBA Most Valuable Player, slammed the Arizona law. He called it terrible. He called it totally misguided. And Nash, who probably was reading memos, said the law would encourage racial profiling and claimed that it set, quote, a very dangerous precedent.
Hmm.
Now, Phil Jackson responded to Nash and the Suns, saying this, quote, "I don't think teams should get involved in the political stuff," he said. "If I heard it right, the American people are really for stronger immigration laws," close quote. And Jackson did hear it right. So when the Laker leader was asked by an ESPN columnist what he thought of the Arizona matter, Jackson said, "Am I crazy? Or am I the only one that heard the Arizona legislature say, we just took the United States immigration law and adopted it to our state?" Arizona lawmakers simply gave it some teeth to be able to enforce it, he added. Now, this is common sense. It makes sense. And it is, in fact, what happened. But film critic Tim Rutan is apparently another in the long list of critics of the Arizona law who have not read it. Rutan describes the statute this way, as one which can only be enforced through impermissible racial profiling of Latinos. Now, he's just like members of the Obama administration who soundly condemned the new immigration law and have now admitted that they never even read it. The first one in the Obama administration who had to admit he never read the law was Attorney General Eric Holder, the lawyer that holds the highest legal office in the land as a prosecutor. Then it was Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, followed by State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley. So we are faced with the fact that high-placed members of an administration that's supposed to be leading the free world attack a four-page text of Arizona's law without ever reading it.
This is unbelievable to me.
And they all demonized and mischaracterized this law because it clearly states that a law enforcement official or agency of Arizona or any other political subdivision of Arizona cannot consider race, color, or national origin. I mean, this law requires that the police can only ask for ID if they have lawful contact with a lawful stop, detention, or arrest, and that authorities must have reasonable suspicion that a suspect is an illegal alien. And then Assistant Secretary of State Michael Posner compared the immigration law in Arizona with the human rights abuses that have taken place in China.
Unbelievable.
Rod Serling must have been rolling in his grave. China's a regime that killed millions of its citizens, that is detained without cause, that abuses and oppresses the people of Tibet. This is human rights violations. And while the United States government authorized the deployment of 17,000 National Guard troops to respond to the oil spill along the Gulf Coast, no National Guard troops have been sent to address a crisis on the border. And of course, the media strategically omit the truth about the reasons and the contents of the Arizona law, and the media has consistently framed critics of the law as bigots, including, of course, Phil Jackson, coach of the Lakers. So Coach Jackson felt some of the pressure after threats of protests to Los Angeles-based Lakers Suns playoff games. The Lakers press office issued a statement by Jackson where he spoke of his, quote, respect for those who oppose the new Arizona immigration law. But he also said he was wary of putting entire sports organizations in the middle of political controversies. But our conflicted film critic out here on the left coast, Tim Rutan, wrote, quote, "I can't bring myself to root against the Lakers in their current playoff series with the Phoenix Suns, but neither can I support them unless the club formally repudiates Coach Phil Jackson's endorsement of," and get this, what Rutan wrote, "Arizona's mean-spirited new anti-immigrant law."
Oh, my God.
But then this guy Rutan, in leftist tradition, couldn't resist attacking Jackson personally. He snarkily asserted, "Frankly, Jackson's reputation as one of the NBA's deep thinkers always has seemed to me to owe more than a little to his impenetrably Baroque syntax," Rutan wrote. "Take the time to untangle his sentences, and what emerges usually ranges from the banal to the incomprehensible," close quote. attacking the attacker, not reading the law, and of course, he's a film critic. But he insists that Lakers players and the team's management distance themselves from what the film critic calls, quote, Jackson's wrong-headed endorsement of a law whose implementation can only affront Latinos' constitutional rights, close quote. Only can affront Latinos' constitutional rights. That's all it can do, according to Rutan.
Can you believe this?
And he warned that if the Lakers close their eyes to Arizona's affront, then at least one disappointed fan, Rutan, will be withholding his support and inviting as many others as will listen to do the same. Well, he may have withheld his support, he may have invited others, but so far there's no discernible lack of support for the Lakers in Hollywood, including celebrities like Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise, Jessica Alba, Hilary Duff, and a whole host of others who just want to be seen sitting in the seats at Laker playoff games. Thanks, Michael, for your full court press and for slam dunking the stories when the media hides the ball. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James.
Severed.
Joining us now with an exclusive Savage Nation report is Eric Stackelbeck.
Michael, great to be here as always. And the big story right now here in Washington, D.C. is that the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, Dennis Blair, is out the door. He had been the Director of National Intelligence throughout President Obama's tenure. And basically in that position, you're supposed to kind of streamline the whole process, get the CIA, the FBI, NSA, everyone on the same page with a common goal of defeating jihadist Islam. It seems like that's not happening. It's not only Blair's fault. It seems like with that DNI position, it's not living up to what it was created for. There is no streamlining. In some cases there is, but there's still, as we saw with the underwear bomber, as we saw with the Times Square bomber, as we saw with Fort Hood, there's still massive, massive intelligence failures here where crucial information that could prevent terrorist attacks is not making its way up or down the chain. Now, I guess you could say in some ways Blair is a fall guy, but he did make some gaffes in his during his tenure. I think one of the biggest ones was last year when he appointed a guy by the name of Chase Freeman to be one of the top intelligence officials in the Obama administration. Freeman ended up stepping back and saying, hey, I don't want the job, because everything emerged about Freeman being a complete anti-Israel guy who was on the payroll of the Saudi government. So a very bad pick there by Dennis Blair, set a bad precedent. So now the search is on for the new Director of National Intelligence. And I have to say, Michael, I'm concerned about a few of the prospective candidates for this position, which really is just another layer of bureaucracy, I think, to our intelligence community.
I see what you mean.
My main concern is a guy by the name of John Brennan. Now, right now, he is a national security counterterrorism advisor to President Obama. I'm sure everyone has seen him on the Sunday shows, parroting the Obama line. Even though he has served in Republican administrations, he pretty much seems to be marching lockstep with President Obama on counterterrorism issues, whereas I don't think Dennis Blair quite did that. I think there was some tension, without a doubt, between the president, between Dennis Blair. I think Blair oftentimes might have told Obama things he didn't want to hear, maybe like Islamic Jihad is coming, it's on our shores, and it's a great danger. That doesn't seem like something President Obama wants to address.
Mm-hmm.
But back to John Brennan, he's a guy who doesn't seem to have many disagreements, at least publicly, with President Obama's policy. And, Michael, I'll give you two examples of why I think Brennan would be a dangerous and a horrific choice for the new Director of National Intelligence. Number one, he gave an interview this week where he talked about reaching out and engaging the, quote, moderate elements of Hezbollah.
What? Are you kidding?
The moderate elements of Hezbollah. Now, this comes on the heels of the Obama administration last year and earlier this year talking about engaging the moderate elements of the Taliban. I think it's pretty obvious, Michael, to anyone who follows this with any degree of interest, that when it comes to jihadist Islamic terrorist groups, there are no moderate elements. Moderate for these groups means the cutoff age for suicide bombers is 6 years old rather than 11 years old. That's moderate. Yet the Obama administration is talking about engaging these people. If you're going to engage Hezbollah, like Brennan suggests, that means you're engaging Iran. Hezbollah is an arm of the Iranian regime, created by Iran, funded by Iran. They are essentially an arm of Iran. Now, Brennan wants to engage these moderate elements in Hezbollah. And listen to this, Michael. These are direct quotes from Brennan, who is a leading candidate to become our top intelligence official. Listen to this. Hezbollah is a very interesting organization, Brennan told a Washington conference. He said there are certainly the elements of Hezbollah that are truly a concern to us with what they're doing, and we need to find ways to diminish their influence and try to build up the more moderate elements within Hezbollah. Then he says, we won't deal with the foreign terrorist elements of Hezbollah. Now, that's a very interesting take by Brennan, his assessment of Hezbollah. My assessment of Hezbollah, Michael, and considering that this is a guy who might become our top intelligence official, he might want to listen. Hezbollah is an Iranian-created and funded group that has killed hundreds of Americans, including the 1983 Marine barracks bombing in Beirut that killed 243 U.S. Marines. This is a group that pledges to wipe Israel off the map. This is a group that pledges to wipe the U.S. off the map, is a sworn enemy of the United States. We can't get lost.
Exactly.
We can't get lost in just believing that Hezbollah is an enemy of Israel. Hezbollah is an enemy, a sworn enemy of the United States. As I said, they've killed hundreds of Americans, American troops. And if you look at the statements from Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, who was Hezbollah's leader and secretary general, he frequently blast the United States, echoes the rhetoric of the Iranian regime, calling us the great Satan. So I don't see where the moderate elements are in this group. And I got to say, I talked to a lot of Israeli government and military officials. I talked to a lot of U.S. intelligence officials, and none of them has ever filled me in on any element of Hezbollah that is moderate or that can be engaged. But apparently John Brennan sees the possibility to reach out to Hezbollah. And another thing about Brennan that really bugs me in the Middle East theater and in his view of this war that we're engaged in right now with jihadist groups, recently he gave a speech. He was addressing a Muslim audience. He referred to Jerusalem as Al-Quds.
Oh, my God.
Which is what Muslims call Jerusalem, which is what Palestinians call Jerusalem. Referred to it as Al-Quds. Now, this is pure pandering. It's another slap in the face to Israel. Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish people. It's been the capital of the Jewish people for thousands of years. The Palestinians have no legitimate claim to the city. Yet Brennan calls it Al-Quds. I'll tell you, Michael, the Obama administration, you know, they call it outreach, engagement of the Muslim world. It almost seems like an infatuation. I think this administration is infatuated with the Muslim world. They're intrigued and infatuated by the Muslim world, and it's dangerous. This has gone beyond the point of being, okay, it's disturbing, what's Obama doing with this pandering to Muslims? It's getting to the point now where it's downright dangerous, and it's going to get people killed, innocent Americans killed. And this line of thinking is prevalent across the U.S. government at the local, state, federal level, this kind of politically correct, naive thinking, a complete ignorance about jihad and what our enemies believe. Just look at what's going on right now, Michael, in New York City, where a 13-story, multi-million-dollar mega mosque is being planned for ground zero.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
That's right. And is radical Islamist by the name of Faisal Abdul Rauf, a guy with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is really the granddaddy of all the terrorist groups. This is a guy who has talked about establishing Islamic Sharia law, who has talked about America being responsible for 9/11. Well, right now he owns the deed to the land, what used to be a Burlington coat factory, just a few hundred feet away from Ground Zero. He's going to build a 13-story mega mosque. This radical Islamist, at the scene of the greatest radical Islamist atrocity, terrorist atrocity that this country has ever seen. The open date, the proposed date of opening, is the 10-year anniversary of 9/11.
This is unbelievable to me.
This is the equivalent of 10 years after Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor attacks. This is the equivalent, and a lot of people have made this comparison, but it's a good one. It's the equivalent of the Japanese building a monument to Emperor Hirohito at Pearl Harbor just 10 years after the attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I call me crazy. I don't think that would ever happen in a million years. You know, 50, 60 years ago, there was a different climate in this country. People were awake. They understood. They had pride. They weren't naive. The fact that this guy, and right now, I don't know what could be done to stop this, Michael. This guy legally purchased this property. We don't know where the funding's coming from. Who knows? Foreign governments, Saudi Arabia, we have no idea. But he apparently, Mr. Raouf, has purchased this property legally. I don't know, in a legal sense, I don't know how much can be done right now. Right now, this project, this mega mosque at Ground Zero, looks like it is being green-lighted. Now, let me give you an idea of the guy who is behind this mosque, Michael, and some of his past comments and his philosophy. This is a guy who says, well, you know, I'm a moderate, and this is a sign of tolerance. First of all, the mosque is going to be called the Cordoba Mosque. For people who don't know a lot about Islamic history, the Cordoba Mosque is named after Muslim Spain. When Muslims conquered Spain, the ruling caliphate was called the Caliphate of Cordoba. When you talk about Cordoba, that's a sign of Islamic supremacism and Islamic conquest. So there's a reason this mega mosque in New York City at Ground Zero will be called the Cordoba Mosque.
Oh, my God.
This is a clear sign of Islamic supremacism, Islamic dominance. I mean, how more obvious can you be? How more blatant can you be than to build a mega mosque at Ground Zero? Where are we at as a country? 9/11 was just 9 years ago. But we live in some very interesting times, and we have some very, very short memories. Now, let me give you Mr. Raouf's take, Michael, on 9/11. This is what he told 60 Minutes just a few weeks after the 9/11 attacks. This is the moderate that will be in charge of the mega mosque on hallowed ground, Ground Zero. I can only imagine what the victims' families think. But he told 60 Minutes the attacks were, quote, a reaction against the U.S. government politically, where we espouse principles of democracy and human rights, yet ally ourselves with oppressive regimes in many countries. U.S. policies were an accessory to the crime that happened. In the most direct sense, Osama bin Laden was made in the USA. This is the guy who's in charge of this mosque. This is the face of this mosque, the moderate.
How could this be going on?
My definition of moderate Muslim, do they recognize Israel's right to exist? It's real simple. I've interviewed Muslim leaders who said, oh, I condemn Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda does not represent the true Islam. And that's great. It's easy to condemn Al-Qaeda. Everyone condemns Al-Qaeda. But then you ask them, well, what do you think of Hezbollah and Hamas? Well, look, we have to have a different conversation about that, I've been told. Suicide bombings, we disagree with suicide bombing by Al-Qaeda, but when Hamas and Hezbollah does it, they have no other recourse. They have to do this because the Israelis are occupying them and oppressing them. Michael, that's how you get down to the nitty-gritty of whether a Muslim is moderate. Do they recognize Israel and the Jewish people's right to exist? And that's how you boil it down. If they don't, I'm sorry. You're not a moderate.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, always a pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
One of Obama's top national security advisors, John Brennan, a traitor refused to call Jerusalem by its real name in front of a Saudi Arabian audience. Instead, he used the Arabic word Al-Quds.
In Saudi Arabia, I saw how our Saudi partners fulfilled their duty as custodian of the two holy mosques of Mecca and Medina. I marveled at the majesty of the Hajj and the devotion of those who fulfilled their duty as Muslims by making that pilgrimage. And in all my travels, the city I have come to love most is Al-Quds, Jerusalem, where three great faiths come together.
What a backstabbing man. And this week we heard Obama declaring our nation was no longer defined by its borders.
Your visit speaks to a truth of our time, in North America and the world. In the 21st century, we are defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. So I say to you and to the Mexican people, let us stand together. Let us face the future together. Let us work together. Trabajemos juntos.
And then the president of Mexico had the gall to criticize the U.S. on climate change.
The well-being of both our peoples depends not only in our ability to face regional challenges, but global ones as well. That is the case of climate change. Climate change is one of humanity's more pressing threats. Global warming demands the commitment of all nations, both developed and developing countries. That is why Mexico was the first developing country to commit to emissions reduction targets and programs. We are working hard to make progress in the fight against climate change.
But at least one representative, Tom McClintock, had the guts to respond to him.
I rise to take strong exception to the speech by the president of Mexico here in this chamber today. The Mexican government has made it very clear for many years that it holds American sovereignty in contempt, and President Calderon's behavior as a guest of the Congress today confirms and underscores this attitude.
And then the next day, Wolf Blitzer of CNN actually brought up a good point. He asked Mexico's Calderon about Mexico's horrible record with illegal aliens in their own backyard.
I'm going to read a paragraph to you, and you tell me if this is true or not true. This is from the Washington Times. Under the Mexican law, illegal immigration is a felony punishable by up to 2 years in prison. Immigrants who are deported and attempt to re-enter can be imprisoned for 10 years. Visa violators can be sentenced to six-year terms. Mexicans who help illegal immigrants are considered criminals. Is that true?
It was true, but it's not anymore. Illegal immigration is not a crime in Mexico, not anymore, since 1 year ago. And that is the reason why.
Can you believe this?
We are trying to establish our own comprehensive public policy, talking about, for instance, immigrants coming from Central America.
Yeah, right. Do you know what's happening around the world? Have you seen what's happening in Greece? Do you know what's happening with the economy? Europe bailed them out to the tune of $1 trillion, and gold went to $1,220 an ounce. $1,220 an ounce. But if you look at the inflation-adjusted prices over the past 30 years, gold could go much higher than that. I've told you about my great advertiser, Swiss America, on this program before. You should reach out to them. SwissAmerica.com. The Greeks waited for a bailout. You shouldn't make the same mistake. Don't wait. Swiss America, now. And here are the stories. You can read them yourself on michaelsavage.com. Top DHS boss says feds might not process illegals referred to them by Arizona officials. That's right. The chief law enforcement officer of the DHS seems to be a lawbreaker. Arizona governor to Obama and to Napolitano. Governor says, do your job. Send us black helicopters. Mr. President, would you instruct Hillary Clinton to intervene on behalf of Dr. Savage? Really? It's on michaelsavage.com. You can still sign the petition list to get my name off that list of murderers and terrorists. Club Med Greeks break the euro. Read about that one. Some Democrats are now running against the president. The Dalai Lama, who I have long despised, who has been revered by the radical left, has come out and said he's a Marxist. I'm a Marxist, says Dalai Lama. Marxism has moral ethics, whereas capitalism has only had to make profits, said the Dalai Lama. How many years have I spit in the Dalai Lama's eye? I told you he was no damn good. He could take his holy robes, and you know what he can do with them. New Jersey governor takes 2 minutes to veto the Democrats' tax the millionaires bill. Good for him. Okay, rock and roll.
Take good care of my baby.
I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today.
Now don't you ever make her cry.
Obama screws Israel in simulation exercise. Read that one. Read Obama the Destroyer. Again, Healing Children Naturally, available only on michaelsavage.com. A to Z Natural Approaches for Natural Complaints. I'm telling you, you need something more than a stethoscope and a pill named Ritalin. Read Healing Children Naturally by Michael Savage.
I know she'd never be with you, so take good care. Savage.